Auckland Grey Power is pleased to sponsor this edition of Senior Focus.
This is Bill Rayner, back with you again, somewhat battle-scarred and weary after a month of being involved in the Auckland Council planning and submission process. This is very much something akin to the old Chinese water torture technique. Once again, I'll be ad-libbing a bit as my guest for today, a North Shore community activist friend and colleague, Susan Wan, who has mounted a parliamentary petition calling for a review of Auckland Council, is not well and has been able to make it. Just while I'm here, I'm sort of not too sure with our program just how many people out there are in touch with it, so I'd just like to ask you, if you could, at the risk of jamming up my telephone system for days, if you could just give me a call on 445 3370. That's Auckland, 09445 3370, if you do listen to the program, just so I can get some idea. It was actually a relief last week to attend the National Grey Power Federation annual conference in Blenheim. Not so much for the Grey Power conference itself, as they are not generally noted for their entertainment value or exciting social life, but for the short add-on time I had to look around the Marlborough district. Blenheim itself was a delightful city, a part of real New Zealand, so different from Auckland it was startling. The city centre itself is extremely attractive, with plenty of space, and the city amenities are in excellently maintained order and very functional. The convention centre where the conference was held was part of a modern complex, lovely architecture, blending the convention centre, the city theatre and the combined RSA Working Men's Club, Cosmopolitan Club, and integrated and very functional whole. The streets were wide with no cycle lanes, indeed no cyclists, and the pedestrian crossings all had small mid-road stopping islands, very useful for the senior community and children. The morning and evening rush hour was 10 minutes long, and the traffic queues had long lines of four or five cars. The lovely compact downtown commercial centre with very few Chinese takeaways and no $2 shops to be seen, as well as a very beautiful surrounding landscape, vineyards and mountain backdrop. And then there's a short drive to Picton and the Marlborough Sounds. A wonderful place. It would be a wonderful retirement centre. They do comment on the high level for Blenheim of the number of old people moving in. Could be coolish in winter for thin-skinned northerners, but it's something the Auckland planners should go down to Specsavers and go and have a look, because it's actually got such a wonderful blend of the facilities, the environment and the people. It really is a wonderful looking place. But first, a musical break from Roger Whittaker, my all-time favourite balladeer, with I Were a Rich Man, a rhyme of what we need to be to live in Auckland comfortably these days.
If I were a rich man, one more, leading nowhere, just for show. I'd fill my yard with chicks and turkeys and geese and ducks for the town to see and hear, squawking just as noisily as they can. And each loud quack and cluck and gobble and honk would sound like a trumpet on the ear, as if to say, here lives a wealthy man.
In Britain, you've got to be joking.
If I were a rich man, diddle 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 digga digga diddle diddle dum, all day long, diddy biddy bum. If I were a wealthy man, wouldn't have to work hard. Should be what I am. Would it spoil some vast eternal plan if I were a wealthy man?
Actually, I thought I was reasonably well off once. Amazing how time erodes that perception. I was very interested reading the Herald on Wednesday. John Tamaheri, a man who tells it like it is, complaining on the excessively high salaries some of our top bureaucrats heading government departments are getting. Head of the Ministry of Social Development, $620,000. Ministry of Health, $500,000. Business Innovation and Employment, $620,000. Department of Internal Affairs, $610,000. And the poor old heads of Transport and Māori Affairs are slumming it on $470,000 and $400,000 respectively. When I retired 15 years ago as the finance director of an international container shipping company after 30 years' service, my final salary and benefits was approximately $110,000. Very comfortable for those times. My predecessor as Grey Power president on the North Shore is a senior primary school principal. His final salary about $40,000 after a lifetime career in teaching. Seniors have a real problem, as the current decision makers just cannot appreciate that our generation raised children, bought houses and saved for retirement on salaries and wages that would not make starting level wages in the current climate. As I recall, my starting wage as an accounts clerk with the post office was £4.10 a week, $9. That's the price of two coffees today. But I digress. Back to Auckland Council and their consultation projects. Many of you recall from the long ago school days the comical story of Don Quixote of La Mancha, the Spanish knight in his rusty armour and trusty squire Sancho riding a donkey. He set off to put the world to rights and wound up tilting with windmills and effectively getting nowhere. On the more sombre stories, the Western Front and World War I, very much in our minds at the moment, where our brave young men rose from their trenches and charged the enemy fortifications. Time and time again, through the clinging mud, tangling barbed wire and exploding minefields, just to be cut down by rapid and noisy machine gun fire in another futile effort to make some progress. Such thoughts are in my mind as we come out of the Auckland consultation process for the 10-year budget and revision of the Auckland plan setting the overall long-term direction for our city. The proposed Auckland plan started as the Auckland plan refresh, a review of the original 211 Auckland plan document. The review had basically three directional focuses, a continuation of the Maori perspective, the Southern Initiative and celebrating diversity, which left the traditional aspects of the city community in something of a vacuum. The original Auckland plan had specific sections and aspirations for each of the community activity sectors, such as sports, arts, culture, heritage, etc., and one specifically there for the senior community. The proposed plan has removed all these and has no clear specifics or budget indications and not fit for purpose. Nobody quite knows how much is allocated to their particular sector. Virtually all the major community groups have complained, and the big hitters, such as the sporting and arts and culture communities, have been on national radio expressing their complete dissatisfaction. It'll be interesting to see whether the council has taken any notice of this on board, or taken any notice of this when the final plan surfaces. Also, the whole Auckland Have a Say consultation process has been extremely shallow, indeed verging on farcical, and itself a cause for serious complaint. Grey Power and the local board has put in submissions in regard to the various sort of senior citizens associations and the need for them to be sort of blended into the planning process for the future, particularly when so many of the town centres are being redesigned as part of the overall unitary plan development of the city. We're quite disappointed. I think I mentioned last time we had something like about 500 or 600 submissions in the end. But because the particular form we were using didn't have a hard copy, it had a page in the online system where you could indicate the particular local boards you wanted this issue to go to. And we were looking at four local boards on the North Shore. We put up a separate sort of little form of our own. Unfortunately, with the Devonport Takapuna local board, that didn't seem to make the cut, because one of the ironies of the process, which was only discussed yesterday at the local board, was in fact that in the North Shore they had 1,032 total submissions on their planning priorities for the local board, and Grey Power would have put in at least 600, of which you could say at least probably 150, 200 came from the Devonport Takapuna area, and we weren't listed in the priorities at all. And so I went down there and had a discussion with them, and it turns out that the process has sort of sidelined all our submissions, and quite where they've gone we're not sure about. So that's an ongoing issue that we have with the council and the whole process. Curiously enough, as Grey Power, I'd actually written to the Auditor General, because part of the planning process is that the Auditor General has to sign it off as being an effective process and document that can be readily understood by the community and for the submissions to come in. And so I wrote to them, not complaining in any way, but just asking them what their parameters were, because the what was regarded as effective, because a lot of the outcome of the Auckland Plan, Auckland Council process, you couldn't call effective. It was very, very shallow. In fact, I went to one of their have-a-say roadshows, as they call them. One was went to two, actually, one at Pacifica and one down at the Takapuna Market. And all it was involved with was sort of council staff giving people strips of stickers, and you could go along to whiteboard and stick these stickers onto a particular sort of topic of the interview form that they were asking about, and which seemed completely unprofessional. In fact, I stuck 5 stickers on one page just to prove the nonsensical nature of the whole process. So that's sort of one of the things that's in the air. In fact, the interesting thing with the Auditor General sort of letter I wrote, as I say, it wasn't a complaint, it was just asking for clarification. They've actually come back and just asked me whether I'd meet with them at the end of the process, just to sort of see if how the process can be improved. So although it's a bit of a back-end situation, probably our sort of involvement in the process might have a good outcome. As they say, they're not involved, can't get involved in any of the policy decisions at all, but it's just getting the situation improved. I would stress that it's not a problem of the people involved so much, or the council is. It's just the city, super city, so big, and to try and get sort of meaningful input is a sort of a horrific job to start with. They're spending $4 billion, and to ask people to sort of comment on this thing in a specific way is very, very hard. It will be very interesting how it all shakes out, and of course it has to go before the council to be approved in place by the 1st of July, so the rates can be struck. And I just have that horrible feeling, or not inevitable feeling, that whatever's there now and the various rates and levies and things are going to be charged will just roll on regardless of the submission process. We certainly need some right relief after that lot, so we'll go back to Roger with Durham Town. Went there once in my youth. Don't recall much about it, but I don't think it was much like Blenheim.
I've got to leave old Durham Town. I've got to leave old Durham Town. I've got to leave old Durham Town. And that leaving's going to get me down. Back in 1944, I remember Daddy walking out the door. Mama told me he was going to war. He was leaving. Watching all the ships going down the line, and they were leaving.
Continuing irritation, indeed major problem for the community, is the continuing land grab by Panuku of our community properties for selling off to boost the cash-strapped council coffers. We've had the situation on the North Shore, which I'm familiar with, and I'm quite sure it's happening in other areas of the city as well, where Panuku have been given this instruction by Auckland Council to raise a sort of very high amount of money, some many millions, from the sale of what they consider non-essential council properties that go into the various sort of activity, other activities, and particularly the centre city rail system. We've had a problem on the North Shore for some years with this, and the particular concern to the senior community is the fact a lot of these properties were put together in the olden days, if you could call them that, by community effort and donations by the community, and in particular benefactors of that time who quite often gave land for a library, and in the case of Takapuna actually paid for the library building, and it's one of the properties under threat at the moment. We went through the situation some years ago, those on the shore recall, I think I've mentioned before, with the Takapuna Reserve camping ground, where the idea was to basically commercialise it by selling it off to Yachting New Zealand for a sort of international high-level yachting centre. And that went through two council sort of cycles and 4 years of community sort of scrap. Eventually the community won, and so now that the Takapuna camping ground is held in perpetuity as a sort of a camping ground and a holiday place for people to go and share the beauties of Takapuna as they have done for over 70 years. A bit unusual in the middle of an urban centre, but that's the whole point. You don't have these things as commonplace anymore, and to maintain that camping ground was a major achievement. The next one on the list, which is hotting up for a major battle now, is the Takapuna City Car Park. It's had a bit of a sort of slightly sort of skewed direction, and it's the scene of the very popular Takapuna market on Sundays. And people are saying, well, you don't really need to save a market, you can put it somewhere else. But it's not that at all. The actual car park was designated as a car park and was bought by the retailers of Takapuna probably 60, 70 years ago as well. And they bought the land, and it was with a loan from council, and it was paid off by what you'd call a targeted rate these days, and was actually dedicated as a car park. And so the council's just been through the process of changing this designation to mixed use, which isn't actually a legal designation at all, with the idea of sort of taking the car park and putting apartments and commercial buildings around the edge, and then taking that money to go back into the super city sort of general fund as all, and leaving a very, very small, what they call a town square, which is completely inadequate. And of course, the complete paradox is there's going to be a much greater population in the Takapuna area with the unitary plan building and population growth. So to sort of take away any open space at all is just not nonsense. The focus is keeping the car park, and there you go, calling it a car park, to keep it as open space. And the councils want to sort of build another car park about 300-400 metres away on another council-owned site where the old gasometer used to be. And the difficulty there, and particularly for seniors, I mean, in the current sort of climate with Generation Zero saying they don't want any car parks at all, everybody's got to ride bikes or go on public transport, is that for many of the seniors, as you well know, you need your little car. You can't walk 400 metres to a bus stop, which I understand is the limit Auckland Transport look on for public transport. And when you get there, you can't struggle back sort of 400 metres in a windy sort of downtown Takapuna with all your parcels and things. So it's quite critical that some car parking is retained in that development. So that's sort of the current situation, which is creating some strife between the residents and council. The other one there, as I mentioned, was the old Takapuna Library, which was gifted to the city for a library, the land and the buildings. It became the area office when the new library was built in Takapuna, and now it's used by the parking warden. So that's gone off onto the out of the books of the council, and no doubt it'll come up for sale as well. So it's ongoing saga. Then, of course, down in Devonport itself, we've got the old area office, which was built in 1908 as the post office and was a Devonport Borough Council for many years before the amalgamation process took place. And that's in fact is designated as a heritage building, and the old council chamber upstairs is in fact a prime heritage protection on it. So what's going to happen is not unclear, but the difficulty there too is Panuku have had that building for 6 years now and it's been virtually empty all that time and unavailable for community use in spite of people asking if they can use it. In fact, they had the local eyesight office there and then they closed that down, and so when the World Masters Games came on, typical Devonport fashion, some of the old volunteers that were there before the commercial versions put in virtually broke in and set up a sort of a pirate information centre for all the people that were in Devonport for the World Masters Games. And the irony is they're still there. This is about 5 or 6 months later. And so that process has been another one that's coming on board. It's some relief to North Shore people because suddenly out of the mist the council were talking about selling off the old Waitakere City Council building in Henderson, and that's not only a very well-functioning council building, it had galleries and sort of art centres things attached to it as well. So they've come out of the mist at the last council planning meeting. In fact, there were four properties from four different local boards on the planning, I think it was the planning committee or the financial committee, for sale, and was withdrawn. The whole four all had protests from their local people. So the whole thing is just a very difficult sort of situation. The key thing that sort of Grey Power's been focusing on is the age-friendly city concept. That sort of disappeared a little bit into the process as well because it's sort of it's age-friendly because it's not purely related to the seniors. It's sort of related to the whole community sort of integration of things, but the seniors sort of aspects are probably the prime important ones because they're basically getting ignored in the current process. It's a benign process. I think it's probably what I referred to earlier in regard to the salaries. A lot of the young people today, and particularly sort of people that might be semi-politically involved, Generation Z, have got no real concept of what it's like being a senior and the special needs that you need and the fact that your facilities are changing around you so dramatically and the mix of the community is changing so much as well. It's another real issue. And so the whole age-friendly city concept is getting some real momentum. There was a meeting virtually of all the senior groups in Auckland put together by our senior advisory panel with Janet Clues, who many of you will know is a leading figure in the West over the years and now the leader of the senior community in Auckland, making it very clear that they had to face up to the fact that a major demographic change affecting Auckland City is the number of older people coming through. I mean, this is not taken into account, the fact that a greater percentage of the community will be seniors in the years to come. And of course the difficulty too, it's not just what the long-standing sort of senior communities, it's the new ethnic communities. They're having problems of their own with sort of isolation and loneliness. A lot of the Chinese people in particular, their families have gone on to Australia or other works, and they're left sort of on their own and in an Auckland environment with not a lot of support and not a lot of friends because they're well away from their home environment. So overall, it's really quite a problem for the community. The other interesting thing that popped up was a little bit sort of intriguing as a sort of delicate subject, I would say, but we'll all be well aware that Maori issues have a dominance in our current sort of culture. Even council is sort of focusing on developing the Maori aspect to everything and actually making sure that the Maori world the Aomori is sort of regarded in all their policies, which does raise some interesting paradoxes, because one of the core Maori issues, you retain your land and value it, whereas Auckland Council's selling it off as fast as they can go. But an interesting dimension in that, with their Northcote by-election on the shore, you've got two candidates. You've got Dan Bidwai, the National candidate, and Shannon Halbert, who is the Labour candidate, and they're both putting them forward as Maori, and they have got extensive Maori backgrounds. But the interesting thing is, which is Bidwai, of course, is a French name, and Halbert is from Scotland. And just checking on their biographies, it's quite interesting because both of them come from very early pioneer New Zealand families. I think both their sort of ancestors back came to New Zealand before the 1840. One was sort of whaling down in the south and the other one was in Tauranga as a trader. And so, you know, they sort of married into the Maori community and whatever, seven generations later, we got Dan and Shannon sort of standing for our local parliament electorate seat, which is interesting because it intrigues me with the Maori because there's a bit of a pop-up aspect to Maori identification these days with the whakapapa, and I thought it's probably interesting that maybe sort of they should acknowledge their Pākehā whakapapa in the same way, as well as giving their background as Ngāti Parau, Ngāti Maniapoutou, Kahaninu. They should also say that they're sort of from Scotland, the MacDonald clan or whatever, or France, their French ancestry as well, just to put the bicultural element back into the process, which is sometimes overlooked. So that's really about all I think I need to talk to you about today. Sorry to be so grumpy. I'll make sure I find something more cheerful next time. At least the Warriors Rugby League team are back on track, but that probably won't excite too many of you, but I have to grasp at straws. Maybe Jacinda's baby will have arrived or President Trump has resigned. We need something to boost us up going into winter. And just to remind you once again, sort of to give us a call on 445 3370 if you do in fact listen to the program, or send me an email, which is at brayner, B-R-A-Y-N-E-R, at extra.co.nz, just to see how many thousands of you out there sort of listen to our scintillating program. So thank you for that. Thanks for listening. We'll wind up appropriately with Roger Whittaker's The Last Farewell. Bye for now.
Rising and ready in the harbour. Tomorrow for old England she sails, far away from your land of endless sunshine, to my land full of rainy skies and gales. And I shall be aboard that ship tomorrow, though my heart is full of tears and despair. Of war I know so very well. Even now I see the foreign flag a-raising, their guns on fire as we sail into hell. I have no fear of death, it means no sorrow, but how bitter will be this last farewell. For you are beautiful, and I have loved you dearly, more dearly than the spoken word can tell. For you are beautiful, and I have loved you dearly, more dearly than the spoken word can tell. Though death and darkness gather all about me, and my ship be torn apart upon the sea, I shall smell again the fragrance of these islands.
in the heaving waves that brought me once to thee. And should I return safe home again?